FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. The date is September 26th, 2016. Just back from New York myself, my daughter's lovely wedding, and hey, it was a great time. Makes you understand the important things in life, but there are other important things too, such as the upcoming presidential debate, the coming implosion of Deutsche Bank, and who knows what's going to happen next in China. And here is John Rubino to talk about us. It's been a couple of weeks, John.
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah.
And just in time for a lot of interesting news, really. As you said, Deutsche Bank is now front page news because the government in Germany came out and said they weren't going to bail Deutsche Bank out, which is a pretty amazing statement on a lot of levels, right? That they felt like they had to say something about Deutsche Bank implies that a lot of other people are talking about it and worrying about it. And the reason they're worried is that this is Germany's biggest bank and Europe's biggest bank and one of the biggest banks in the world. And they have screwed up on an almost biblical level here. You know, they basically have just spent the last decade leveraging themselves to the hilt. Their derivatives book, derivatives, by the way, are financial contracts in which big financial institutions place bets with each other. Sometimes they place bets on the same side, sometimes they're on opposite sides, but they place big bets. And Deutsche Bank's derivatives book is much bigger than the entire German economy, which means a tiny little correction or tiny little drop in the value of its derivatives in percentage terms would blow not just the bank up, but possibly the entire country. And so people are now really worried about that because Deutsche Bank's stock price has been trending down for several years and the trend arc is getting steeper. In other words, it's falling at a faster rate. And if you overlay Deutsche Bank's stock price downtrend with the trend in Lehman Brothers stock from just before the crisis in 2008-2009, they're almost identical. And Lehman Brothers was a big Wall Street investment bank that crashed and burned and was allowed to fail by the U.S. government. And that, in a lot of people's opinion, set off the contagion which caused the deepest recession since the Great Depression. And so Deutsche Bank is following that trend line really closely. So it's got everybody spooked. And now the government feels compelled to come out and talk about the possible collapse of Deutsche Bank by saying that it's not going to bail them out, just has everybody even more spooked. So that's a big story that bears watching. So everybody should create an email alert for Deutsche Bank and just see these headlines as they come in.
Yeah, well, just because they're not going to bail them out does not mean that they're not going to nationalize them, John.
Oh yeah. Saying you're not going to do something for a major government in the world today pretty much guarantees that you are going to do it because that implies that things are so bad you have to do damage control. But it also means that when the rubber meets the road, you're going to have to act. Because these institutions are systemically so dangerous. They're all too big to fail. All the major banks, the top 10 banks of the world, plus a lot of other insurance companies and pension funds and things like that, are so big now. We've allowed them to grow to levels that make it impossible for us to allow them to fail. You know, if Deutsche Bank crashes, that basically blows up the entire European project. And it means the euro currency is thrown into turmoil on foreign exchange markets, which by implication means the dollar and the yen and a whole bunch of other major currencies are also thrown into turmoil with consequences that we can't predict now because we're so highly leveraged that one crisis inevitably leads to a whole bunch of other crises. And nobody knows where several crises together would lead, probably to some kind of hyperinflation or Great Depression rerun. So they can't let that happen. So Deutsche Bank getting into trouble guarantees that the German government or maybe a consortium of major governments will step in and, as you said, nationalize them in effect, which, you know, would would maybe stop the bleeding at just Deutsche Bank, but would terrify everybody else. Because if that thing, you know, that entity is not viable, then what does that say about Citigroup or JP Morgan Chase or Nomura in Japan or any number of other major financial institutions that 5 years ago were seen as weaker than Deutsche Bank? So here we go. You know, we're on the verge of something really serious. And, you know, we've been on the verge of several crises in the past that haven't turned to crises. But when we get the next big one, this is how the early part of it will look, you know? So we need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, if they go down the tubes, it's going to set off a chain reaction.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have to nationalize every bank in Europe. Let's face it. And then how far are we from nationalization here in the U.S.?
Not far. Let one of our big banks tank and we'll have to bail them out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in effect, nationalizing them, take their liabilities and put them on the national balance sheet and put us as taxpayers on the hook for them, which means, you know, you can trace the threads of a crisis like that out. But one of the paths through which the crisis will progress is consumer spending. You know, when something like that happens, you are not going to go out and book a really nice vacation, or you're not going to go buy that new house or that new $70,000 car or whatever, because you're afraid of what the headlines are telling you about the world at large. So you get a pullback in consumer spending, which is 70% of our economy. So we tip instantly into a recession, which throws the other big banks into crisis, along with a lot of other companies, and forces the government to run massive deficits, which terrifies the currency markets and on until the system spins out of control. We've created the conditions for this. So now we're just waiting for the catalyst. We're waiting for the thing that lights the fuse. And Deutsche Bank could be. You never know until after the fact, but this could be the thing that sets off the avalanche that, you know, that wipes out the village at the bottom of the avalanche. You know, we'll see. You never know.
One little twig snapping.
Yep.
It's a big twig, obviously. My gut feel is we're going to wake up one day and Deutsche Bank will have been nationalized. I don't see what else they can really do here, John. There is nothing else to do. Somebody has to take a hit, and I think taxpayers are fed up with it.
And remember, Carrie, this is during a recovery. You know, the global economy is supposedly growing pretty well right now.
Yeah,
not great, but it's going in a positive direction. It's getting bigger, creating more wealth, which normally gives entities like big banks a little bit of a cushion. You know, they're getting more business. They're bringing in more cash. Therefore, they can handle the ups and downs of their own financial mismanagement. So let something blow up now, then what's going to happen to everything else when that blow up, when Deutsche Bank's crisis pushes us into a recession and the global economy is shrinking? It's almost inconceivable at this point, you know, because everybody's so highly leveraged. And that is not just one sector of the economy. All the governments of the world, all the major governments have more debt than they've ever had in history. Most countries' corporate sectors are more highly leveraged than ever before. And most countries' consumers have either more debt than they've ever had before, or they're close to that record and moving closer. So there's nobody that's safe from this, no sector that's safe.
Yeah, nobody is safe, and we're all at the mercy. And speaking of no one being safe, the world's second largest or largest economy, depending upon whom you talk to, is also teetering because they've got all that stealth debt that you never knew existed.
Yeah, the drumbeat of bad news from China is amazing, because every time anybody really looks into the Chinese economy, they come back with a horror story. Oh, you know, we thought there was $1 trillion of debt here, but there's actually $7 trillion, stuff like that over and over again. So China, because it's not really a market economy, it's a command and control economy that's trying to run a market economy below the political level, and not really understanding how markets work. So they intervene continuously. They allow things to be hidden when, of course, you know, an American shouldn't be criticizing any other system.
No.
I get that. But for the purposes of talking about China, you know, leaving aside the fact that we're almost as bad, they're making a lot of mistakes, and they're building up debt at a rate that is possibly unprecedented. China might be borrowing more money than any other country ever, which is really saying something after the last decade. You know, everybody borrowed incredible amounts of money, but China seems to be the worst offender. And it just came out over the weekend that their smaller banks are funding each other. You know, they're not getting their capital from outside the sector of small and medium-sized Chinese banks. They're basically just funding each other, lending money to each other, which means if one goes, a bunch of other banks are on the hook for that debt, and you get the potential for a cascade failure of the Chinese financial system. So it goes on and on, Kerry. You know, we have created the conditions for something that's really unprecedented. And everywhere you look, you see things going on that could set off the contagion. So we could do this all day long because we haven't even talked about Japan yet. And, you know, the U.S. financial system is so much weaker under the surface than it looks according to the headlines that are being published. So there are problems everywhere.
Yeah. And you get the feeling that when it happens in one place, it's probably going to happen all over. There's not going to be any way to contain it because they're so intertwined and everybody owes everybody who owes everybody. So where does it stop? Once there becomes real counterparty risk, everybody is a counterparty in the current international financial system. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to stop it once it starts?
Investment thesis, once one big entity blows up, is what's next? In other words, if the Italian banking system crashes, then who's going to crash next? And once everybody starts looking in that way with that mindset, they're going to find all kinds of things, which they will then sell, you know, to minimize their risk to that sector, whatever. You know, the Italian banks tank, then they'll sell Deutsche Bank. If Deutsche Bank crashes, then they'll sell the French banks. Then they'll sell the American banks and so on until there's not much left standing. You know, pretty much the only thing that you're going to want to own in that kind of a cascade failure of the global financial system is gold and maybe silver. Yeah. You know, you just want to be in the safest possible thing, not national currencies, because governments are going to have to inflate away their currencies in order to deal with the crisis. Not real estate, because real estate is mostly leveraged. So, you know, if you have a London penthouse and think you're safe when all of this stuff starts happening, you'll see the market value of your London penthouse drop by half in months, you know, and you won't be safe after all. You can live there, you know, you still get some utility for it, but the value of it, should you need to sell, will be considerably less than what you paid in this kind of an overheated environment. So really only sound forms of money survive crises like this. Not that we've ever had a global crisis like this. This is a unique animal, but in terms of scale, it's different from anything that's come before, but in terms of type, not really. You know, we've had individual countries blow up in this way, where the banking system got ahead of itself and there was a crisis and then the currency had to be devalued. That's happened a lot in history. And gold and silver have sailed through those episodes in great shape. So it's it wouldn't be a surprise to see that happen again. And it's highly likely that most other so-called safe assets like government bonds do not sail through this process in good shape.
Now, I don't see how that's going to happen because the governments are the problem, and they've just been like drunken sailors on a major binge. And, you know, now the piper's got to get paid. And hey, speaking of paying the piper, we know what today is. So today's Monday. It's debate day. First of all, do you think the debate's actually going to happen?
Well, I think there are a lot of different reasons that people are going to watch this debate. You know, one is what kind of crazy stuff is Donald Trump going to say? So you got the entertainment value from, you know, reality TV there. And then will Hillary Clinton make it through a 90-minute debate without collapsing or having a coughing fit or something like that? And so that's sort of the NASCAR rationale. You know, in NASCAR car races, a lot of people show up, look who's driving craziest to begin with, and they watch them the whole time to see if they're going to wreck. Well, Hillary's now that kind of thing for a lot of people. People are just curious about whether she makes it through. And that makes this kind of a unique series of debates because it's almost like we're not interested in what they say in terms of policy. Mm-hmm. Because first of all, we don't trust the current political system to keep any promises anyhow. And second of all, we don't really understand the issues anymore. The issues have gotten so muddied by debt that there's no fix for anything. So when a politician stands up and says, I want to do this or I want to do that, most people suspect that it's not going to work anyhow, even if they understand the nuances and the details of what the politician is talking about. So policy is actually kind of secondary in this election. You know, we assume that who's ever in charge is going to do crazy stuff in foreign affairs. We think we'll invade people going forward. We just don't know who will invade, you know, who will antagonize next. But we've been antagonizing people and invading people for such a long time that we just think that's normal. Any politician's going to do that. We assume who's ever in charge will borrow incredible amounts of money because that's what these guys do now. We assume they'll interfere in the workings of the free market through various manipulations like they do now because they have no choice in order to stave off a crisis. So, you know, it's hard to see from a policy standpoint how anything they say is going to lead to any concrete expectations. So this is all about personality and health and stuff like that now. Yeah. And it's going to be one of the highest rated political debates, one of the highest rated TV shows of all time. Mm-hmm. So, and you know what you can do, Carrie? If you've got a virtual reality headset, you can watch it in virtual reality now. Really? So that you're sitting in the audience watching it happen. And I actually have one of those. I'm going to do that. I am going to watch this in virtual reality, at least part of it. Let's see.
I thought we were living in virtual reality. Yeah. So what's the difference here, John?
But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. Make no mistake about that. And let's see if it happens first. I think she would do anything in the world to avoid having to do this, Hillary.
And you know, the funny thing is, Carrie, going into this election, the debates were going to, she was chomping at the bit. She assumed that she would absolutely destroy Donald Trump by talking coherently about policy. And then and letting everyone see that he can't do that. And now it's the biggest risk in the election for Hillary. It's amazing how fast things have changed.
Yeah. I mean, look, she collapsed at the 9/11 memorial. It appeared that she had some type of seizure or convulsion, which all these rumors about her health that have been circulating seem to be somewhat validated. And now what? Where does she go from here? How do you like prove a negative, like, no, you know, I don't beat my wife, right?
I think if she gets up there and her voice is strong and she's completely coherent, then that will put a lot of concerns to bed. You know, if she can make it through a 90-minute interview on global TV.
Yeah, you think she's going to?
I have no idea. I mean, you know, this is such a wild card kind of election because and debate because you just have no idea what's going to happen, which makes it that much more interesting because the least likely way for this to go is for it to be a coherent, respectful, policy-centric debate, right? Which is what most debates have been in the past, where these guys get up and they tell you what they want to do in a fairly understandable, coherent way. That's the least likely outcome tonight.
Well, you know, you're dealing with crooked Hillary there.
They're going to call each other names face-to-face, you know?
What if she becomes the name caller and he just plays it cool and calm and is the total gentleman?
Well,
what happens then?
Okay, now I think her strategy, you're right. If he's a nice, straightforward guy up there, then that plays to his advantage because it's a surprise. People won't expect it. And so they'll change their opinion about him. Her strategy is to rattle him and really get him saying crazy things. You know, she wants to make him so mad that he just goes off the rails. And so you have all these different layers of strategy. You know, Hillary has to, first of all, seem healthy. And second of all, rattle her opponent. But to rattle somebody like Donald Trump, you've got to say some extreme things, right? You've got to call him names.
I don't think you can do it. I don't think it could be done here. I think everything he's done all along has been by design, not by just pure reaction. You know, he's crazy like a fox. You know?
But he does say things that he has to walk back. Because they're perceived as being too incoherent or crazy, even for Donald Trump. And then he has to take it back. So her goal is to get some of those things to come out tonight, right?
Yeah, I don't see her being able to do it. I just don't. I could be wrong.
I think
he's matured as a candidate over the past month, said very few of those statements, and She's going to be hard pressed to rattle his cage. I think it's easier to rattle hers just by saying, what about that neurological exam? And, yeah. Hey, you know, well, which yeah. I can't tell if you're looking at me or not, Hillary, because one eye is going off, you know, all the way over there. And the other one, you know, I don't know where it is. So please, see, look, the thing is please look at me when you address me.
he would be happy doing that. That's the thing. Most, you know, previous presidential candidates would be uncomfortable with something like that. But Donald Trump will be happy to say things like that.
Yeah, this is the Donald here.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, he's got a sense of the media here and the ability to control it and focus it like no other candidate before him, right? I mean, who else has been able to have his way with them? A Republican especially, right? Nobody.
Yeah. Well, you know, my perception of that is a little different, that he enrages the media and they say terrible stuff about him, but people don't care. They give him a pass for craziness because that's not his point. You know, his point is that he's willing to point out the ways in which the current system is working against regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he says something like that, he can say all kinds of crazy things around that. But people who feel themselves being disadvantaged by the system only see that one thing. They hear the fact that he kind of feels their pain and he understands what nobody else seems to get, that the system needs to be revamped rather than tweaked, you know?
Yeah.
And so that buys him a lot of credit.
Yeah. He's got a thick skin, even though he reacts and gets in these fights. It's by design here, like the Rosie O'Donnell, headbanging match. I mean, and the Megyn Kelly, you know, that's by design. I mean, that was a strategy. Just like there's one other strategy here, which is to portray himself, knowing that Hillary's sick. Obviously, they have spies in each other's campaigns. There's nothing new there, right? We always know that's happening. And so what does he do? He knows that she's ill. So he starts a pace and forces her to try to keep up with him, which she cannot do. And, you know, he's doing 3-4 rallies a day and she's doing 3-4 a month. And he's looking like he is, basically impervious, you know, like Superman here. And what happens to her? She has to eventually get back on the road because people are saying, my God, he's all over the place and you're nowhere. And then when you do a rally, you have nobody there unless there's some celebrity draw. And even then, you can't get 20,000 people to see you. So that's been part of his strategy from the get-go is, hey, prey on her weakness, force her to expend energy that she can't afford to once she's called out on it, which she has been recently. And it seems to be working. And hey, man, I just, like you said, is she going to be alive for this debate or will she be so drugged out? I mean, you've seen all the YouTubes from the different doctors. 71% of doctors surveyed said there's something wrong with the lady and she looks unhealthy. And now you got the eyes going in different directions, which there's evidently a certain nerve that in all of these degenerative diseases gets injured, and that's why you can't focus your eyes together. And the thing just goes on and on, John. I mean, in the collapse and then the twitches and the seizures, the apparent seizures she's had in public that they try to cover up and pretend never happened, right? I mean, it's where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And there's a lot of fire here. So,
yeah. Yeah. And the networks are loving it, you know?
Yeah.
This is money in the bank for the people who are going to broadcast something like this, because it's got an audience that wouldn't normally care necessarily about tax policy or immigration necessarily or anything like that, or what we do in Syria. That's not so important to most of the people turning in right now.
No. What's important, but look, there's a huge vote that people just got so disgusted with the system, stop voting. We saw it in Florida. 25% of the people that voted in the Florida primary had not voted in the past 4 elections. That is unheard of. I mean, it's saying something there. So I think they don't care that much about policy details. look, the president doesn't run the government himself. There's 5 million gazillion bureaucrats running around like chickens with their heads chopped off who are responsible, and they're just hoping he'll fire a significant portion of them, right? I mean, that's what they're really hoping for here. So, yeah, because the government's become so destructive to the economy that you need a rollback there. I mean, the regulations, everything else. But we will soon find out, John, what's going to be. Anyways, that's it for today. So check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Check out our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. It's been totally revamped. I think you will like the new site. It's a richer kind of media experience. Let us know what you think. Send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Love to hear from you. Love to know what you're thinking. Tell me what you're thinking about any of the issues we discussed or guests that you'd like to have on or anything else. And we will we'll do our best to address it. And John, hey, next week we'll talk about what happened here. And I think we'll be closer to knowing what's going on with Deutsche Bank. They can't allow the problem to fester. Something is going to happen, and it's got to happen fast because you can't allow that bank to have a run. Because Germany will shut down. Let's face it, you know, Germany will go bust. And then so will the entire EU. And then it'll spread to the world because we need the EU, huge market for American product services. They need us. China needs them. They're a bigger market than the US even. So we need to see what's going to be with them. They're not going to let them just close their doors, John. Mark my words. And I think the end result at some point is no more derivatives. When that happens, I don't know, but I think, John, we're heading for that day.
Yeah, I think so too, Kerry. So we will have a lot to talk about.
All right, we will definitely have a lot of lot to talk about. So make sure you tune in next Monday. That's going to be October already, which is freaky. I think it's, what is that, October 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. It will be Monday, October 3rd. We'll talk about Deutsche Bank, the debate, China, and a whole lot more. John, we'll talk to you then. Be well.
Thanks, Gary. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.